Welcome to Opus Private Clients Wealth Style Podcast. All of the material discussed on our podcasts have specific themes, and that's to move your wealth and lifestyle forward, increase your purpose, and provide you with clarity and confidence. Opus's mantra is always forward. We have found that regardless of one's wealth, moving your lifestyle forward is the number one priority for our clients. On our podcast, we'll share our rich 35 years of experience in designing strategies, share clients' experiences, and introduce resources that have positively impacted our clients. We trust that you will enjoy our direct, transparent, and realistic approach to positively impacting the quality of you and your family's lives. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to the Opus Wealth Style Podcast. I am your host today, Evan Wall, with my good friend and partner, Yvonne Watanabe. Yvonne, how are you doing?
Great, man. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Happy Friday.
And today we are joined by a very distinguished person who we're looking forward to having a conversation, Carmela Bennett. I'm going to give you a quick intro and maybe let you do the bulk of it. But Carmela is a licensed psychotherapist, has a private practice in New York City and Connecticut. You hold a doctorate from Columbia and a master's in marriage and family counseling. You also are a teacher at Columbia teaching leadership development as a process and practice of self-development. I love that. How did I do? Anything in addition to add to that?
Sounds good to me. Yeah, I've been doing this a long time. I'll date myself and say I've been doing it for 30 years, 30 plus years. Been in this field, had some related professions, teaching, coaching certification. It's not a lot of my practice right now is leadership coaching, but I can do that. And the specialty area, I guess, that maybe is still helpful for people to hear about is I have a specialty in what's called somatic experiencing. So meaning that I work both mind and body. So body is where the emotions are held, right? So we can talk about them, but when we actually sort of feel them and accessing them in the moment, we can really get somewhere. So it's a modality and approach that works really well with any kind of issue, but depression, anxiety, and trauma. I was a dancer in my past. It's something near and dear to me, and that mind-body connection is real.
Well, we've definitely been looking forward to having this conversation. We wanted to start to think about how couples communicate around money. And so I reached out to one of our dear friends who I know are patients of yours. They go for couples therapy and raving about you. And so I just asked if we could be put in touch to have this conversation. So as you're having conversations with couples, are there things, key things that you're looking at or looking for as it relates to how couples speak to each other or just about money in general?
Well, I don't even have to look too hard to see how they speak about money, right? Because it's right there. They bring it. One of the reasons it's so obvious, because it brings up so much emotion. Money is one of the number one or the number one issue that couples argue about. Also, like, way near the top of the issues that people get separated and divorced about. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of weight, right? And there's a lot of emotion that's connected to it. So they usually bring it right there into my office. So what I do look for is they're there for, by the time they get to me, it hasn't worked very well. At a place where, hey, we need to get some help with this because it's becoming so disruptive and like stuck. They're usually in a very stuck place. What I do look for is how are they communicating in the moment? How are they talking about this issue? How are they able to hear each other or not? A lot of, because so much passion comes up around it. So I can see pretty quickly what the disconnect is. What people really need to understand is that money isn't about money. Conversations about money, it's not about money. It's about what money means to them. People get so heated about it because it means a lot, right? And it comes from what they have learned about what money means, their experience of what money does or doesn't do. And it's so much about their values. So our values are the things that are near and dear to us. And the things that, when they get breached, create a lot of reactivity. Does that kind of help?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mainly, you mentioned sort of how what their experience perhaps was with money. Is it typically the couples that have two different past experiences with money, or their values are different around money? Is there one sort of thread there that makes it more difficult to discuss or creates more tension? Is it one person came from a family that's more well off, another one not as much, or one has more of a scarcity mindset, the other one doesn't think his money is sort of scarce? Is it, what causes most of the frustration?
The differences. You sort of nailed it. It's the differences, not the things that are the same. The part two of the equation, one, so a lot of the work starts with, like, hey, helping couples understand what their partners, what money means to them, where that came from, so they can like start to really understand, hey, they're not just being a jerk because they want to shop at Goodwill, right? Or they're not just being mean to me because they don't want me to buy a car. There's something that's really important about money, what it means to their partner. So helping them understand that brings the conversation can get a little bit more compassionate. I didn't know that. Oh, I understand that. You know, all the judgments comes up so fast, right? Oh, what's the big deal? I spent $200 on a bottle of wine. That's nothing. But to your partner, it is. It means, hey, that $200 in my experience, right? $200 means a lot. And spending that on something that you don't need was not something that I was raised with, or is not something that is something that actually doesn't feel good to me. Money is meant to be spent on things that are important, like the education or housing, whatever it is, that's important. So the part two is once you can, we can sort of untease the like, hey, what does it mean? Then how do we move a couple towards establishing common goals or dreams, right? So money is the also supports our goals and dreams. And maybe they talk about it. You know, sometimes people are like, oh yeah, we want to do this and that, right? But to make it really clear, what is, if I save the money, if you save the money on a $200 to $200 on that expensive bottle of wine, right? We could have taken a vacation together. That's the part two of helping couples really articulate with each other, hey, what are our mutual goals and dreams we have?
When they're stuck, it's obviously just communication, just speak to each other, but it's making sure, having conversations around what are their values, what are their shared goals, and that'll kind of help move them in the right direction around how to speak more maybe comfortably around money between the two of them.
It's easier said than done.
Yeah.
Too, right? It takes really listening to each other is not something that at that point is that simple to do. The other thing I look for when I'm listening to them, do they have a style of communication that is more like, if I have to prove myself right, so you're wrong? I need to be right, and I'm right, and I'm right. No, this is not the right way to spend money. This is not the right way, right? We shouldn't be doing that. You're wrong. It's also kind of helping couples get a different skill set around how you talk and listen to each other. I think to your question, one of the biggest dynamics that money brings into conversations and relationships, and you can see it this everywhere in the world, right? That money is about power too, right? There's a power dynamic that money just naturally integrates into a relationship. It's a biggie. How does a couple navigate power?
If one particular spouse earns more than the other one, does that create a dynamic that they aren't used to, not comfortable with? Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yvonne, I get questions all the time, I'm sure you do, on how should we structure our finances? Should we have a joint checking account? Should we have individual checking accounts? Should we have individual credit cards, joint credit cards? I always say it's dependent upon your situation, of course. Everyone's got their own specific thing. I'll share with them what I do. But what I find is when everyone wants to keep their own separate things and maybe like hide or not share some transactions, that's when it can start to get a little shaky.
Very shaky, because then the trust is being shaken, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that was a really good point that you made, like about shared or separate checking accounts. I rarely say to anybody ever, you have to do this, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a really good idea for couples, like especially married couples, to have a joint account. The underneath it part, right? Because there's an implicit like, hey, there's a we here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is our money.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because so many times, yeah, just like I said, a lot of couples just want to keep separate stuff. And, you know, to me, it's certainly not always, but it can be a sign of like, well, why do you want to keep everything separate? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like because you earn more income or whatever the situation is, that you guys should have less control of expenses. And it's not my place. I'm not going to really put myself in there unless it's actually causing an issue, but it's certainly something I come across occasionally.
Yeah. And what's being said there when there's only separate, there's the I in me, the I in you. And how much, that's another thing that I listen for, is how much do I hear we being spoken? We, right? Mm-hmm. How does this couple come from a we? Because if there's no sense of we-ness, then there's more polarization, right? Or there's more separation.
Yeah.
And if you listen, couples talk in that way, right? We, this is what we want. This is what we're doing this weekend. Or am I hearing like, here's what I'm going to do this weekend?
My wife used to yell at me all the time when I had to relay messages between my wife and my mother about, this was a little while ago, back when our kids were kind of on more of a nap schedule. And yeah. I was always less nap, sleep regimented. My wife is very sleep regimented. Everyone needs to get their naps in exact time and exact location. And so I was relaying information. I'd always said to my mom, Lori wants X regarding whatever we're trying to do. And she always used to yell at me, no, this is like, you say we. So I eventually came around and said we, and all has been better since.
Yeah.
It's funny. I think we don't generally have this kind of, you know, occasionally we'll run into clients that will come in that'll be single and need to integrate their fiance mm-hmm. before they get married. And I definitely think it's a conversation that should happen pre-marriage. Mm-hmm. For us, for Joanna and I, it wasn't a conversation that we had pre-marriage. Like, I didn't have anything. She was in medical school. Like, yeah. She didn't have anything. There wasn't much to talk about, right? You know, right. And as things got more complicated, it was, I think we grew up on the same page in terms of growing it together. So it wasn't us starting off on different playing fields. So it did, I think it was easier that way. If you're two, I'll call grown adults that come from two different spaces, two different incomes, and have lived an adult life pre-joining forces, that conversation needs to be happening like early and often, right? Getting on the same page. When kids get in the mix, obviously that gets even more complicated. What do you want to spend? What do you not want to spend? Education costs, those kinds of things. You know, it's easier to curb spending for yourself than it is to spend mm-hmm. it for your kids when the priorities are different and sort of we're both kind of doing this together. So I get that. And how do you recommend people establish these goals or these beliefs around money or their philosophies on where they want to go? How do you do that?
My role is to help surface what their beliefs are.
Okay.
And because their beliefs are already there. And it's not, people don't go around thinking that in their head, right? Oh, here's what I believe about money, right? They're certainly acting about it every day. I would never pay for a cab, for example. That would be extravagant. I would always take a cab because my time is worth money. Mm-hmm. In those small but significant ways, people act out how they value money and their approach to money all day, every day. But then you get two people who come from different backgrounds. I think to your point, you said, what if two different people are different? They're always different. It's rare, right? And I think that's important to just normalize it mm-hmm. because it doesn't necessarily mean that, oh my gosh, you shouldn't be together or you're destined for divorce or it's rare that, well, how could anybody have the same exact viewpoint that you do on anything?
For sure. You know, it's interesting. You bring the cab one sort of is a funny one for me because when I didn't have any money, my time wasn't as valuable. You know, I would 100% not take that cab, A, because I couldn't afford it, but B, because my time literally wasn't worth the money. But now it is. It's also really interesting to kind of see the change in philosophy that could potentially happen, right? That maybe that creates friction or frustration over time, where if one person changes at a different pace and the other, you know, because we both evolve, right? So if one person changes at a certain point, you know, and the other one still has the same philosophy around money, yeah, that could create some changes in attention as well, I would imagine.
Yeah. And it does change, right? You weren't thinking about college educations before you had kids. Mm. And then priorities change. Your priorities change over your lifetime. You know, you may not have been worrying about retirement when you were 30, but you're thinking about it when you're 65.
Hopefully that's well before then, but yeah.
Hopefully well before then, and that's your job, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Where you come in. But that is the part two, right? Hey, to help couples really structure in these conversations so that it's not just random that, oh my gosh, now we have to think about that, or they're thinking about it individually, but they're never communicating together.
Also, I find typically there's typically one of the spouses that take the lead on financial decisions. Not necessarily that they do all the finances, but typically there's one that, I mean, I kind of experienced that. I imagine you do, Yvonne. So it's really important that it's intentional and it's on a regular basis, whether it's maybe not once a month, but once a quarter, twice a year, you're actually sitting down and having a conversation about how life has changed for us. What are our current values as it relates to money, values, importance? Like, what do we want to do for our family, for ourselves? When do we want to retire? What kind of vacations do we want to go on? Just communication, just having those intentional conversations can be really helpful. And ask the question about we, not I. See, I'm learning.
Yeah, I totally support that. And actually, I'd even say they're not, what was the word you used? They're not helpful. They're necessary. Mm-hmm. I also recommend that couples like build, start to structure in like a budget date night. Use plan once a month. It's like, hey, we're going to go out. How's our budget doing? How are we doing? So that gets to be familiar and it's not this scary, oh my God, we got to have the conversation. It's ongoing and it doesn't have to be bad. It could be fun.
Yeah, sure.
You're going out and you're like, yeah, let's talk about, you know, how's the budget? And there's less likelihood that things could get hidden too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're talking about it more regularly. One of the things I speak to clients about is budgets are great in the moment. What it is, you're looking backwards. All right, over the last month, 3 months, 6 months, where have we spent our money? Where do we want to cut back? The problem with budgets is going forward, life is always changing. There's new expenses popping up. Maybe you got a raise, a bonus. Things are always changing. And so it's important that there's clarity around how are you doing as it relates to your cash flow, how much is coming in, how much income is coming in versus going out. And that you, and clarity meaning like you have clear access to it, this mobile app or website or whatever, and both couples, both spouses or partners can easily view it. Like those kinds of things are important, and there's lots of tools to do that. But the clarity and awareness to make sure that you're able to easily track it, either of you, whether you're in the middle of that conversation or just one off and wondering, I wonder how we're doing. It's important to be able to identify that as opposed to just, gee, I wonder how we're doing and leave it at that.
Yeah. And also transparency, although it can be scary sometimes, especially if somebody comes from a family that money was not discussed, right? Mm-hmm. Some families never talk about money.
Yeah.
Right. They don't learn. So you don't learn to talk about it. And then it has there's all kinds of implications. Oh, if I talk about money, it's scary. So that's, again, like the messages that people have picked up over as they're growing up. What is money? I mean, we don't talk about money because that's rude, but people carry that forward. Well, I can't talk about money. Why are you talking about money? But that can be unlearned. Helping people understand, it's rare. Let me think about that. Yeah, I think it's rare that people come into my office and understand what they believe about money. They understand, they know what they do with it. They know how they may recognize their feelings they have about it, but they don't understand what it means to them. And I see this with couples who sometimes, you know, the gender dynamic where money, there's a power. So if it's, could be the man or the woman, right, is earning less. And how they feel they have to keep proving that they're equal by doing whatever, working overtime, not talking about it, you know, however that's coming up or where that's showing up. That's not what the partner is not understanding that. They just see a partner who is not revealing things or is never home, stuff like that. But really understanding, hey, my partner gets me.
When one partner either makes more income or takes the lead in the planning, I almost refuse to meet with people or new clients where only one wants to be involved, because it's not an exercise of longevity. If only one wants to be involved in the conversations, I don't care if the other partner says, listen, whatever he or she says, I'm good with, I'll do whatever. I don't care. Like, you still need to be involved in the conversation. Like, I need you both here. I need you both present, because you're going to bring up things that concern you, that you feel a type of way about money, or you have questions that the other person didn't have, or you know, we're playing telephone, you're trying to explain to them third party what the, like, I can't do that, right? It's got to be both parties, if you're decision makers or not, involved in the conversation. And I think that dynamic is really, really important. And obviously, if they're not having it together with me, they're definitely not having it behind closed doors when we're not there, right? It's just not happening. So I think part of what we try to do, at least in our practices, is just facilitate some of that conversation if it's not being had at home.
That's fantastic. I think where therapy can sort of tag on or can be kind of support is for individuals or partners in the couple to understand what makes it so hard. What makes it so hard for them to go into the office? What makes it so hard for them to talk about this? In some ways, are they giving over the power? Are they just sort of giving over the power to their spouse or partner and not even realizing? And what's that about? Because that impacts the other person as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you seeing any difference in, I'll just call them money fights or money problems, or you know, the issues that are happening as a result of social media over the last few years? Has that changed the dynamic of the concerns that people are having? You know, are you seeing more of the spending habits of people changing, or is it the same? I'm just curious as how social media has kind of impacted it.
That's an interesting question. I can't say that I have, what it has impacted though, are things like gambling addictions, right? Gambling addictions went way up.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Just the access of being able to do it on your phone.
Yeah. In the pandemic, it went way up. It was also the stress, the tension was part of an addiction.
It got legalized around then in many states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People were stressed out. They were bored. Some people had more money. Some people had less. So that definitely has been impacted by online. There's more ability and gambling addictions, like any addictions, usually are always hidden in the beginning. When they kind of burst into plain sight, it's a shocker, right? It's a really tough one for couples to deal with, because oftentimes there's been huge debt, right? Been racked up. Money has been spent that they don't know about. So there's a real rebuilding of trust that has to happen. Anyway, that's one thing that has impacted. The other, you know, it's easy to spend money online though, right?
Sure is. We have a joke in our household. Some strange package shows up, and lots of strange packages show up. If Lori ordered it, it was, what would you order? You definitely order this between midnight and 5 a.m., which has happened many times. And then if it's for me, it's like, this was an Instagram purchase, wasn't it? But
yeah,
more often than not, though, you'd be surprised that I don't regret most of my Instagram purchases. There are definitely some. Definitely. In fact, I was just thinking about that yesterday, but I think they know me pretty good there.
My daughter, anytime my daughter sees a box now, she says Amazon. She's two.
Yeah.
So she just automatically thinks that every brown box is Amazon. If she sees a random truck parked in my front, my driveway, it's Amazon. It's hilarious. You know, maybe scary, but kind of funny.
You know, Theragun, right? The like kind of for your muscles, whatever.
Sure.
Theragun had this eye cover massage. It was an eye massager. And yeah. I looked at that. I was like, oh man, that's going to alleviate so much stress in my life. And they targeted me like a few times. I didn't do it right away. It was like at the third or fourth time, I was like, you know what? I'm going to look ridiculous when I'm wearing this thing, but it's going to be great. And I got it, and I don't think I'll be using it as often as I originally thought. So it was one of those swing and misses. But
that's going to be a re-gift for sure. Yeah. For sure. That's all. Maybe we'll do like an Opus grab bag.
That's a good idea. Yeah. That's what we should do. Everyone get rid of their crappy.
That's it. Holiday
crappy gift purchases they bought.
I love it.
Well, Carmela, we really appreciate your time and appreciate you coming on. As we wrap up here, are there any other topics or just, you know, subjects you want to make sure the audience is aware of, and also how can they hear more about you and your practice?
One of the questions you posed was, you know, what can people do? There's ways like financial date night, right? People can learn how to ask these questions. It doesn't have to be only in a therapy session, but start to ask the questions of like, hey, what does money mean to you? You know, what was it like for you growing up? Some people, we often have an understanding of, this is what I know about my partner, right? But we don't get that connection. Like, what was money like for you? And they're bringing that forward. People can have those conversations together. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a therapist's office. And almost always it comes out as something about, it means security. It means independence. It means freedom, right? It means power. It means control. All those kind of values, right? And it's, they'll come out. So I encourage people to, hey, go out to dinner or whatever and talk about it. What was money like growing up for you? What'd you learn about it? How do you feel? What are the kinds of things that the money got spent on? And then also to really concretely make those goals, those dreams. What are our dreams? What are our dreams together that we want to build and that financially we need to support? Mm-hmm. People love it, actually. They come back and it's like, that was so awesome.
Yeah, real no, authentic conversation with your partner. It's,
they feel so much closer. Mm-hmm. It's a real bonding experience. So that's one thing that people can do. They, if they want to find me, my website is my name, www.carmelabennett.com. I also have a Psychology Today, so they can look me up on Psychology Today if they want to find me there, or the somatic experiencing. Any burning question that
came up? Yeah, Carmela, just have you ever done or considered doing like a group session where you'd have multiple couples come and ask sort of these probing questions for them to have in a room? Have you ever done anything like that?
I haven't, but it would be awesome. I think it'd be fantastic because groups are so wonderful because people love to hear what somebody else is like, oh my gosh, they're saying that. That's how I feel. People learn from each other. They open up around each other. It kind of demystifies a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Groups are be a fantastic way for people to kind of learn some of these skills and how to approach money.
That's a great idea.
I like that idea. We're gonna talk more about that.
Yeah, I think so.
This has been awesome, Carmela. Thank you so much. I'm sure our listening audience will appreciate it. And to our listening audience, thanks for tuning in. If you wouldn't mind and enjoy the conversations, please give us a like, subscribe, 5-star rating. We read every one of them and appreciate them all.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Style Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available.
This podcast is intended for informational purposes only. Guest speakers and their firms are not affiliated with or endorsed by PAS, Guardian, or Opus Private Client, and opinions stated are their own. Yvonne Watanabe and Evan Wool are registered representatives and financial advisors of Park Avenue Securities, LLC, PAS. Security products and advisory services offered through PAS member FINRA SIPC. Financial representatives of the Guardian Life Insurance Company of America, Guardian, New York, New York. PAS is a wholly owned subsidiary of Guardian. Opus Private Client, LLC is not an affiliate or subsidiary of PAS or Guardian. Opus Private Client, LLC is not registered in any state or with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission as a registered investment advisor. Yvonne's California Insurance License Number 0H44206. Evan's California Insurance License Number 0H04936. Compliance Approval 2024-168365 expires February 2026.